Good evening. Glad to be here again tonight to our guests that are joining us. If you're here for the first time, Wednesday nights, we have been studying the book of Proverbs, and we have been studying this book for over a year now, but it's truly been, in my personal experience, I've been blessed to have learned so much from this book and the few chapters that we have done so far. And we hope and pray that you will follow along with us, and that you, if you have any questions, please stay behind, and we would love to answer those questions. We'd love to give to your Bible questions, Bible answers. So we invite you to stay with us a few minutes. So where did we leave off, brethren? What have we seen so far in Proverbs chapter 9? Very good. So we were able to see verses 1 through 6, her invitation, right? Her preparation, her diligence, and her desire for us to sit with her, to feast with her. Verses 7 through 10, or verses 7 through 9, what are we seeing? Very good. So we see once more that compare and contrast, but why is that section, why is that part of the proverb in there? What did we learn? Remember, wisdom is still speaking here, right? She's personified. This is part of her invitation. But what is she doing in verses 7 through 9? She's setting forth a test, right? She's making us reflect. As she's calling upon us, she's realizing, right? She's, if you will, having a conversation with herself as she's thinking about what the two responses could be. We could either be a scoffer, right, who would then reject her invitation and rebuke her, or not rebuke her, shame her. Or we can be wise, where we will love her and increase even more knowledge. We wrote last week, right, on the board, that list of the definition, or how Solomon, through inspiration, tells us what a scoffer is and what a wise man is, and we put them side by side. So now we get into verse 10. Now, this is very important to pay attention to this, right? Because this, verses 10 through 12, are still a part of wisdom's appeal, right? Now, we've already seen that verses 7 through 9, she sets forth a test. She sets forth a way, or if you will, a mirror to show what reflection we have. We either reflect a scoffer's reflection, or we reflect a wise man's reflection based on how we react, right, to her instructions, and based on how we react to her invitation. Now remember, this has been going on since Proverbs 1, right? This has been going on since Proverbs 1, where we have been seeing her and folly contrasted. And we've been seeing both of them trying to make us choose them. But let's go ahead and read verses 10 through 12. And this is very interesting, right? The Bible says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years of life will be added to you. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself, and if you scoff, you will bear it alone." So, in verse 10, what other part of the proverb does that sound like? And remember, within the first 9 chapters. All right, chapter 1, verse 7. Where else? Chapter 3, verse? Very good. So in chapter 7, in chapter 9, verse 10, notice that once again, wisdom brings it back to the fear of the Lord. Okay, keep that in mind. What does verse 11 sound like within the first 9 chapters? "For by me your days will be multiplied, and years of your life will be added to you." Very good. 3:16. Where else? 3:2. And what about the one that we just saw, right? Chapter 8. The final verses, right? Verses 32 through 36. And finally, verse 12. Well, that sounds a lot like what she just said in verses 7 through 9, doesn't it? Remember when we started studying this book? We talked about repetition. We talked about how in, after every three chapters, right, wisdom does the same pattern. She always follows the same pattern. She begins by calling the simple. She then warns the simple about rejecting her. She then gives reasons why we should choose her. And then she concludes it by giving us the option to choose between life and death. And it's always between life and death, right? Well, here's that pattern just in these three verses. This is how we know that she is now coming to the conclusion of her appeal, of her invitation. And what she's doing here in verses 10 through 12, what's happening here is that in verses 7 through 9, right? She tests the man. But then in verses 10 through 12, the pathway to her feast is revealed. Someone go to Job chapter 28. Job chapter 28, verse 12. Job 28, 12. If someone can read it for us, please. Now, in chapter 28, as a bit of a background, Job is talking about wisdom. And chapter 28 is very, very similar to the nine chapters that we've been studying as to wisdom's value, wisdom's importance, why we should follow her. And Job, very, very similar to what Solomon does. He speaks about her value being greater than the rubies. He speaks about her role in creation. All of the things that we found in the first nine chapters of Proverbs, Job also writes about. But pay attention to the fact that Job in verse 12 asks the question of where can wisdom be found? Now go to verse 20 and verse 21, if someone else can read that for us. Verse 20 and verse 21. So Job, for a second time, asks the same question. What this teaches us, and it reiterates what wisdom has already stated in her appeal in the first nine chapters, is that wisdom must be found. Wisdom is not inherited. Wisdom does not automatically come into the mind of man. And therefore, this proves to us that knowledge and wisdom are not the same thing. You know, we know what geniuses are, right? We've heard of terms like savants. We talk about geniuses who just automatically know everything and they can, you know, they can figure out their own area. We talk about savants who just watch something and then all of a sudden they know how to do it on their own. But that's knowledge. Wisdom, on the other hand, isn't automatically obtained. Wisdom has to be searched. Wisdom, as one of the minor prophets would say, has to be hunted for. Not hunted in a negative sense, but rather it's like a treasure hunt, right? We have to diligently look for her daily. We have to desire it. We have to have that zeal to want to grow and have that wisdom. And this only happens when we recognize her value, right? When we recognize the value of wisdom in our lives, her value greater than any riches we can have in this world. Her value greater as far as the quality of life that I want to live. Her value greater in the sense that I see that I can be like God in the sense that God used wisdom when he created the world. Wisdom is valuable, but wisdom isn't easy to find. Go to James chapter 1, and keep your fingers there in Job 28, right? But we'll get back there. Go to James chapter 1. Let me give you a bit of an example of biblical proof of wisdom and its difficulty, right? Chapter 1, and we'll begin there at verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Now notice verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting. For he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. Why do you think James includes that in there? Why do you think it's important that when we ask for wisdom, we have to ask with faith or in faith? Okay.
And then when Hebrews 4:2, it says, for unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. So like you said, it won't profit anything.
So the passage our sister just read, right, with Alex's comment. What did the Israelites do in the wilderness when they were going through trials and tribulations, when God was testing them? They murmured, they complained, they sinned, but what else did they do? They called upon God, didn't they? But the way they called upon God, as James himself would later say in chapter 4, was amiss. They accused God, didn't they? Many times they would say, is this why God brought us out here, out of Egypt, so that we can die? Right? When they went to Moses, in essence, as they were going to Moses to complain and to demand, they weren't asking. They were demanding for quail. They were demanding for food. They were demanding for water, right? Every time they went to Moses to demand, they were in actuality going to God. Because they went to Moses because they knew that God spoke to Moses and Moses would speak to God on their behalf. But it wasn't accompanied by faith, as our sister just read in Hebrews 4:2, right? See, brethren, when we call upon God and we're asking for wisdom, this is going to help us in our moment of trial. Before we can even approach God's throne, we have to remember who we are approaching. Go back now to Job chapter 28. Now, remember, Job twice now has asked, where can wisdom be found? She's hidden, says verse 21. It's a search, right? We're searching for her house. This coincides with what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 and 14, isn't it? The two ways. The gate that leads to the way is narrow as well, and it's hidden. Because we have to find it. We have to search for it. And when we find it, we have to go through it. But it's hidden because it's narrow. Now let's go verse 23 and forward. In fact, let me go back to verse 22. I think this is such an interesting thought that Job gives, which is what reminded me of James 1. Destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. So even destruction and death have heard of wisdom. You know, this is how honorable she is. This is how valuable she is, that even destruction and death have heard about her. Why do you think they've heard about her? Because how do the wise men react when destruction and death arrive? How did Job react when destruction arrived to his house? What was the first thing Job did when, after he received all of the misery the first time about everything that had happened to him, everything that he had lost? He worshiped God. How did his wife react when Job himself became ill? She, in an indirect way, cursed God, didn't she? And Job says, you have spoken as one of the foolish women. Job found wisdom and he was feasting with her. his wife lost her way. You see, now we go to verses 23 and forward. God understands its way, and he knows its place. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it indeed, he searched it out. What does that sound like from Proverbs? Chapter 8, right? Wisdom's presence in creation. How wisdom claims, right, makes the claim that God used her to create the world. Remember? Then he saw wisdom, says verse 27, and declared it. He prepared it indeed. He searched it out. And to man, he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. Why is the fear of the Lord wisdom? Well, when man doesn't, excuse me? Because it's God who reveals the path, right? Twice, Job asks, where can wisdom be found? Without God, man searches for wisdom, but he will not find wisdom. He will not find her house. He will not feast with her. He may find a knockoff like earthly wisdom, right? But those are the Nike shoes with the check mark backwards, right? Those aren't Jordans, but those are Bordens. So notice how Job twice has asked for the location of wisdom, but man cannot answer. Verse 23, God understands its way, and he knows its place. Brethren, when we're lost, when we don't know what we are doing, when we don't know where we are driving or where are we going, what does the wise man do and what does the foolish man do? What would the wise man do if he knows that he's lost? And in order to ask for directions, you have to do what? You have to humble yourself. What does the proud man do? Spoken with a lot of experience here, Alex. And his wife, you don't have to agree with him, Farah. No, I know the shortcut. Trust me, this is a shortcut. 3 hours later, that's the longest shortcut, right? Pay attention to that. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Why? Because God knows the pathway that leads to her. But we have to humble ourselves before God. And we have to acknowledge that he knows the path that leads to her. But God will only reveal it to those who approach him with reverence and humility and ask for directions. That's what 10 through 12 is doing. You see that? In 10 and 11, remember, wisdom starts by testing. Are you a scoffer? Or are you a wise man? Are you foolish? Or are you wise? Very simple way to understand which one we are. Are you willing to listen or do you know everything? When we are willing to listen, we have already accepted, I need help. I cannot do it without God. You see, Job understood this. And remember that Job is speaking these words as he's being mercilessly attacked by his comforters, quote, comforters, right? They are speaking foolishly. They keep telling him, you have sinned, you have sinned, you have sinned. This is why God is punishing you. Job, on the other hand, has been speaking through wisdom. He's been presenting the evidence. He's been giving forth proof. And everything that he presents is in accordance to what God had commanded. But pay attention to this, that Job says this in chapter 28. He speaks about wisdom in this way because here he's revealing what has been giving him the source to resist sinning against God. What has given the strength to wait in God and to be patient? Even though he didn't understand the why of what was going on, he did understand the who was in control. James 1:5, if anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask who? God. It's not about what, it's about who. The wise man knows that. The wise man knows to whom to ask directions from. Joel?
And I think this, with Joel, it also exemplifies knowing partial wisdom, having partial wisdom, because his comforters had some idea of wisdom. They knew that God was responsible for all things, but they didn't have complete wisdom, and they weren't searching it like he was.
Exactly. That's a very great point, right? They had some wisdom, but somewhere along the way, they got lost again, didn't they? And again, we go back to Proverbs 9, right? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Because he knows, says Job, he knows where wisdom is. Brethren, when we humble ourselves, right? How many times do we find ourselves in a situation where we're like, man, you know, I know who can help me out of this jam, but oh, I don't want to go to him. You know, last time we talked, it was not good, and we haven't spoken since then. Why don't you reach out to him? No, because then, you know, I'm going to have to apologize. Then maybe you should apologize. Maybe you should be humble and approach them, knowing that they have what you need. You should make amends with them. See, brethren, the world doesn't want to reconcile with God. The world wants to do things their way. The reason why our society is the way it is because man persists and insists on doing it their way. They refuse to take advice. They refuse to listen to what God has to say. They don't even want to come near his house. And this goes back to verses 7 through 9, right? They scoff at God's word. They scoff at that God is even alive. Psalm 14, right? The foolish man says, there is no God. Remember that? And why do they say that there is no God? Because they want to continue and persist in their sins. You know, stand in the assembly of atheists and proclaim that God has created this world, and what's going to happen? You're going to be scoffed. You're going to be mocked. In fact, what happened to the Apostle Paul at Mars Hill when he began to speak about resurrection? What did the intellectuals of Athens do? Some scoffed, some walked away, and some said, oh, we'll hear on this matter at another time. How did Felix react? Too many letters of driving you insane. Notice what wisdom is saying here. Is that folly begins by rejecting that God is the source of wisdom. Folly begins when we, brethren, fall into the trap of thinking, I know more than God. And sometimes we may not say it out loud, but we do say it with how we live our lives. Did you know that this was the case with Moses? You see, the second time, and I don't want to get too much into this because we're going to be probably seeing this on Sunday. God told Moses in regards to the rock that he was to do what? Speak to the rock. Now, let's pause there for a moment. Let's fast forward to our modern times. How many of us would go speak to a rock today? You know, I know of someone who used to speak to trees, right? But how many of us would speak to rocks? If there's a cloud of smoking fire, you might be? Okay. Where would we begin? What would I say to this rock? Did Moses even ask God, what should I say? Did he even inquire of, well, Lord, what am I to say to this rock? Well, just ask water from it. But Moses wasn't listening, was he? What did Moses tell the people of Israel in regards to how they were going to bring forth water? Remember? Let's go to Numbers 20. Notice what happens, brethren, when we lose sight of the fear of the Lord. When we lose sight of the fear of fearing God, we lose sight of wisdom. We get lost again. You see that? Numbers chapter 20, verse 9. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels." Now pay attention to this. "Must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Who's we, Moses? Who's we? When did you bring water from the rock the first time? You see what Moses did there? In a moment of anger, right? I also want to mention, in a moment of mourning, because his sister had just died, Moses has a moment of unwisdom, a moment of folly. A fly entered the perfumer's house, and it cost him dearly, didn't it? It cost him dearly. Verse 11, then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod. How many times did he strike the rock the first time? Once. How angry and how flustered was Moses that he struck it twice, right? But pay attention to Moses' lack of wisdom there. Like Joel was warning, right? He did as God commanded him. He took the rod. He gathered the people. He went to the rock. He had wisdom up to there. And then his wisdom fell short. He does not fully commit to all of that God had commanded him. But where did Moses' problem begin? Not asking, "What shall I say to it, Lord?" You want me to speak to that? I'm sorry, run that by me again, oh Lord. What am I supposed to say? When he was going to go to Pharaoh, he asked that question, didn't he? I think it would have been harder to speak to an inanimate object. Okay, please, nice rock, can you give us water? He never asked, because that shows us that Moses wasn't listening. He wasn't listening, and he just reacted, right? Brother?
Can it be sometimes we have wisdom but not understanding? That's why the Proverbs writer would say, "In all that given, you didn't understand."
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we fear God and we have the wisdom, but we don't understand what we should do, so we don't depart.
And verse 10, Proverbs 9:10 makes the same point, right? It says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." So wisdom and understanding always go hand in hand, right? Moses, he understood what he did the first time. And that's why he reacted the same way. Moses had faith that water would come forth from the rock. Should we bring forth water to you again? He didn't doubt that water was going to come from the rock. And in fact, God's long-suffering and mercy is shown in that water still came forth from the rock. But it cost him dearly. He didn't fear God. What does God respond to Moses in verse 12? "I was not glorified. I was not glorified among the people because of you." Moses, I know you were angry. I know that you're sad and in sorrow. But that does not justify your disobedience before me. Job was in sorrow. Job was in deep sorrow. He lost all of his family, all of his children. His own wife, he lost her support and she was suffering. He lost his own health. But through the book of Job, we read, and with all this, Job did not sin with his mouth. Wisdom kept him in his integrity. Moses had a lapse of judgment. He had a lapse of judgment. And even though Moses, right, rectifies and Moses dies faithfully, he's still not allowed to go into the promised land. He still lost that great honor, him and Aaron, both of them. We're not allowed to go into the promised land. See, when we go back to Proverbs 9, verse 11 is seen in the example of Moses. For by me your days will be multiplied and years of life will be added to you. It's not saying that you're going to have many years of life. No, it's talking about, again, the quality of life, right? Up to that point, Moses was doing well. Moses was the second generation. They were going to enter the promised land because they were around the 40th year when that happened, by the way. So imagine, for almost 40 years, you've kept yourself faithful. You haven't complained. You've done everything that God has commanded. And when you're right at the finish line, you trip. And here is a man who's known as very meek by the Bible. In Proverbs 9:11, brethren, what we are reading is when we learn to allow God to guide us. When our emotions get the best of us, if we use our mind to lock our emotions down with God's word, there is a proper way to be angry. The Bible says, be angry and do not sin. There's a proper way to be angry. There's a proper way to mourn. There's a proper way to grieve. Wisdom dictates that if we learn from God how to do that before it happens, we will have a better quality of life when it happens. Remember, wisdom is seeing the end before it begins. We all know we're going to mourn one day. We all know that we are going to get upset one day. We're going to get frustrated. We're going to sometimes get impatient because life is full of trials and tribulations. In fact, as Christians, we know that we're going to be persecuted. We know that we're going to be mocked. We know that we're going to be jeered. As Christians, we know that sometimes our own family are going to turn against us. And as Micah 7 teaches us, sometimes we're going to sleep next to our enemy. But in all of that, the wise man, because he knows this, because he knows that this life has those types of world problems, he's prepared because he's been training with God. He's prepared because he's been feasting at the house of wisdom. He's been sitting at her feet, learning from her, so that when those days arrive, he can remember these instructions and apply them in the moment they happen. Brethren, knowing that you're prepared, it gives peace, doesn't it? You know, my uncle, who was a mechanic, I've been thinking a lot about him lately. he had a little blue truck, a little blue Toyota. But it was not the best kind of truck as far as the eyes were concerned. But man, that truck, it would outlive all of our newer cars because he had that engine, that transmission, and everything where it needed to be. But the reason he never fixed out the outside is because all of his tools were always in that truck. And whoever saw his truck would never assume that he had a great amount of money in tools in the back of his truck. And when I tell you that my uncle had a lot of tools, my uncle had every tool that he needed for whatever he needed to fix. There was not any kind of mechanical problem that he could not solve because he didn't have the right tool for it. Even when the part was new, my uncle would make sure to go and find that tool and purchase it because he knew that one day he was going to come across that problem to fix. But not only would he buy the tool, he would use it on his truck so he can learn how it worked, what the part looked like, so that he would be ready for when the opportunity presented itself. There was not a job that my uncle could not do. Not because of lack of tools. He was always ready. And he always drove his little truck wherever he went. I'd be like, Theo, Come on, man, you got a nicer car. Why are you always driving this little truck? And he would tell me, burro. In English, is donkey. He'd tell me, you never know. You never know when the opportunity would present itself. When it does, it's better to be ready to take it than to lament that you didn't have what you need at hand. And it was funny because sometimes he would dress up nice, right? He would dress up with his nice clothes when he would go to worship, and he'd come out of this old truck that just looked so assuming and didn't look the right part. But he also carried his clothes in the car if he had it to work on his car or anybody's car. Verse 12, if you are wise, you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you will bear it alone. Once again, she's testing. But with this test, now she's warning. Go back to chapter 8, verse 36. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. All those who hate me love death. Tie those two passages together. She's saying the same thing with different words. Proverbs 9:12 and Proverbs 8:36, she's teaching us that to reject wisdom is to love death. And it makes sense because when we reject wisdom, we are rejecting God. We are not fearing God. God is the provider of life. Man and sin and Satan only bring forth death. So, verses 13 through 18, wisdom has now ended her speech. She now brings a close to her appeal, to her invitation, and folly decides to speak now. Now it's her turn to speak. Now she's going to appeal to the simple. And it's important to pay attention to that. Both wisdom and folly are appealing to the simple. Both of them are trying to get the simple to choose them. Now it's interesting to think about the fact that folly can teach something too. You know, foolishness can be learned, brethren. Like wisdom isn't inherited, foolishness isn't either. And that's the point of verse 12. Verse 12 is showing us that we individually have a responsibility to either grow and be wise in the wisdom of from above, or to stagnate and remain in the foolishness with the wisdom from below. But I cannot blame anyone for my wisdom or for my foolishness. They are my choices. They are my responsibility. If I choose to be wise, then I will be wise for myself. If I choose to reject wisdom and if I scoff at wisdom, then I will bear it alone. Go back to chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. Verse 28 is what chapter 9, verse 12 is talking about. Then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would have none of my counsel and despised my every rebuke. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their own way and be filled to the full with their own fancies. For the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will dwell safely and will be secure without fear of evil. Remember what we talked about? The repetition. As she ends and concludes her invitation, she makes it very clear, if you choose to reject me, there is a point in time where you're going to need me and you will not find me. When that point comes, it's going to be when you realize you could have prevented all of this. You could have stopped yourself from going off this cliff. Now, we're talking about the consequences of choices that have been made, not situations of life and not circumstances of life that happen. We're talking about the consequences of foolish decisions that we make, and when those consequences come to claim their payment. Our time is up, and next Wednesday is the final Wednesday of the month and the year, so we will pick this up again in 2026, where we will go from verse 13 to verse 18, which then will lead us into the new section of Proverbs. Let's have a quick word of prayer. Thank you all for your attention and for your participation. If you will, please bow with me.